The Committee of Economic Development, Trade, and Tourism is now convened. It's 5:25. In attendance are Representative Holmes, our newest member, Representative Tuck, Representative Rammers, and Representative Dugan. We are very excited about our program this evening because it is a review of the DOT and public facilities and the Anchorage International Airport, which is just a powerhouse of the state. It's this huge piece of infrastructure that's connected to all of our other infrastructure, like the port and the railroad and Fairbanks and everything. It's very important. So although our numbers are few, our interest is keen. And if you'll introduce yourself, we would be delighted for your presentation.
Great. Thank you. My name is Christine Klein, K-L-E-I-N. I am the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Transportation, overseeing airports and aviation. And we were asked to come and give a presentation, let you know what we're doing on marketing efforts with our international airport system, and specifically the Anchorage International Airport. And so what I've done is invited Linda Close, our marketing manager for the Anchorage International Airport. But I did want to point out that we are the Alaska International Airport System, and that includes our Fairbanks International Airport, which is our sister airport. And we work closely together, so I would like to introduce Linda Close, who has been working for the airport for about 9 years. And prior to that, she had worked for Linden in the private sector, marketing for air freight forwarding and cargo. So I thought it would be most appropriate to have her come and give the presentation today, in case you were tired of seeing me in the hall.
We like seeing you.
So this is Linda Close, and I'll have her run through the presentation for you, and then I'll augment as needed as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Linda, we appreciate having you here. And Fairbanks is a diversionary airport. I know that. And Mount Redoubt, if it were to blow, we would see all the planes on the tarmac. And Fairbanks loses $6 million a year, which my former colleague, Representative Samuels, used to point out all the time. And but it serves a very important function. And we appreciate the tandem relationship.
Yeah, that's right. And I would like to point out that Anchorage wouldn't be as strong if we didn't have Fairbanks as a diversion airport. So we're very fortunate to have both in our system.
We're statewide. We have a statewide perspective in this committee. That's our great strength.
Cool.
Okay, Linda, the floor is yours. We're very excited that you're here.
Thank you for letting us come and speak with you today. You know, we just wanted to come and give a little bit of an airport overview, kind of give you a little bit more in-depth information on what we are actually doing to develop economic development, trade at the airport. I don't think we have a great story to tell, and I don't think we tell it often enough about what really is available and what really happens at the airport there. Kind of wanted to start with a little bit of an airport overview and little figures and stats and things. Talk about some of the advantages to Anchorage, some of the opportunities that are there for market and trade, and the outlook and where we see things going here. I wanted to start with this picture of the Anchorage Airport. It was in October, and this was a busy day in October, and it was a 30-minute stretch here where we had 40 cargo aircraft on the deck at one time. It was so busy. You can see that we've got cargo aircraft parked at the International Passenger Terminal. FedEx, UPS, the Northwest Hub was completely booked, and we actually had a couple of cargo airplanes that were waiting for other cargo airplanes to pull out so they could pull in. So it's very unusual to get that much activity at one time in a 30-minute time. The airport is a huge economic engine for the city of Anchorage. We account for 1 in 8 jobs, about $850 million in annual payroll. And I'm sure most people have seen that. We quote that a lot. But I wanted to take it one step farther, also out of the ICER report, all these facts. The economic impact to our city is $2.3 billion a year. $1.4 billion is just on fuel sales coming through the airport. About another $80 million a year in construction. $30 million a year to the hotels there for crews and flight crew overnights, and then $850 million for for annual payroll.
Chairman, can I?
Yes, Representative Holmes.
Oh, please ask.
We've been talking a lot about fuel here, and so I was just curious. So that $1.4 billion would be money that would be going to the refineries, to the railroad, for transportation,
This is $1.4 million in fuel sales to the fuel companies. The fuel companies then pay.
So there's been buried in there would be the money that goes to the railroad, for the transportation, the refiners, the people who market it, the whole. We've been talking a lot about that in this building.
It's Alaska's largest value-added industry is the export of Jet A in other people's planes. They pick it up in Anchorage rather than transporting it to foreign land. They stop in Anchorage, pick it up, and move it out for us. And it's a tremendously large industry, which is under a lot of pressure when the Jet A price globally is subject to a recession. And then our refineries, we have hypothesized, then have to sell the Jet A at below cost in order to stay globally competitive to service the $600 million in bonds that are serviced in exclusively by landing fees for Ted Stevens and the Fairbanks Airport, and consequently, that a lot of those costs we further theorized in that retail gas report we did are laid off onto Alaskan consumers on home heating oil and on retail gasoline when the Jet A market isn't robust enough to make a profit for the refiners. That was the theory that we proposed.
I kind of wanted to show a little overview of all the cargo carriers that come through the Anchorage Airport. And when you start looking at a list of some of these names, it's pretty amazing who comes through the airport there, because the average person would not see. The red and blue are current carriers that are coming through. The carriers that are listed in red are new carriers that have initiated service in the last 5 years, and there's 10 of them there. The four carriers I have up in the little green box there are new carriers that have entered the market in the last 5 years but have been absorbed by one of the current carriers. For example, Dragon Air was bought out by Cathay Pacific, and so Cathay flies their routes into the U.S. Transmile Air, Polar Air Cargo took over all of their routes, and so now Polar's increase their routes to cover those. So all in all, in the last 5 years, we've had 14 new cargo carriers enter the market at Anchorage there. So it's amazing growth there. And then to drill down a little bit farther here, I've got a list here of cargo carriers by home country. And you can see we've got Japan, Korea, Taiwan, Australia, Canada. And then we have 14 U.S. carriers. And what is significant about the 14 U.S. carriers is that we only have four carriers, U.S. carriers, who take general cargo, who pick up and move freight for freight forwarders, general customers, and that sort of thing. And that's UPS, FedEx, Northwest, and Polar. The other 10 cargo carriers are actually flying for one of the foreign carriers as contract carriers because they don't have enough aircraft in their fleet to fly all their capacity. The most recent statistics that are out for world ranking is 2007, and we should get the 2008s here shortly. Anchorage is the third largest cargo airport in the world.
God, that's awesome.
Based on cargo tonnage that passes through our facility. It is amazing to think that.
Linda, can I ask you, it was in the ADN that we laid off 68 FedEx pilots, and furthermore, with the shutdown of one of the units at Flint Hills, the paper quoted a 30% decline in freight for Anchorage just a couple of days ago. Is that true, do you believe, for the other 9 airports? And could you follow up with us to let us know that? That would be significant for us to know if that 30% reduction in freight is the same for, let's say, all 10 of those. You don't need to check with all 10, but if you have if you can spot check that and see if we're suffering a similar decline or if we have a unique exposure to the Pacific Rim or I think that would be interesting to us.
Yeah. But what we have seen is that there has been a decline across the board, some higher, some lower. Then, you know, we're not quite at 30%. We hit 28% for 1 month, but year over year, we're not that low.
We should probably also clarify that the FedEx pilot layoff, while we can't speak to their business decisions, what we had heard and had been confirmed is that their pilots were put in other locations, domiciled in other locations. They weren't necessarily,
Positions were transferred out of Anchorage, but there were 68 positions that were transferred out of Anchorage. Of that 68 positions, only 17 of them lived in Anchorage anyway. But that still leaves 425 pilots based in Anchorage for FedEx.
Amazing. Yeah. And ladies, when you speak, just for housekeeping, if you could just identify yourself on the record, because you both have lovely voices, and it's easy to mistake one for the other. See, I'm becoming subtle.
Yeah.
Have you noticed?
Yeah, I noticed.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Tuck.
I just want to make a comment that I was reading recently, not only has transportation gone down, I believe, worldwide for air freight, but also for water cargo. And I was reading that they were concerned because trade is slowed down so much, there's not enough places for these ships to park their boats now that water cargo has dropped so much.
Okay, we're grateful for that fact. Let's get back to our program.
Okay.
I'm just jokes.
Well, just adding on that it's a whole global thing going on.
Levity after 5 o'clock.
All right, ladies, who's in charge? Go ahead. Keep it rolling.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
One of the reasons we have the traffic is that we are our rates and fees are very, very competitive. And here is a look at some of the landing fees that some of our carriers encounter around the world for a 747-400 to land. I mean, Toronto's $12,000 to land there, and we're currently at $1,175 to land.
So it's fascinating. Representative Togan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed that the airports that have a lot of traffic sort of the top slide, and are not, what we're not doing is comparing ourselves to those airports in this slide, but we're by and large comparing ourselves to other airports. Would it be fair to say that the ones that are getting a whole bunch of traffic here, like Memphis and Hong Kong, which are not in on the competitive rates and fees slide, are charging landing fees more like Anchorage's than some of the big ones here, or is that not right?
No, Hong Kong, Shanghai, Incheon are all much higher.
They are much higher. Yeah. They're just not on this.
They're just
slide.
Not on
okay.
this. Tokyo's high. Yeah. All of them are.
So if I might, Mr. Chairman, thank you. So Anchorage looks pretty good compared to its major competitors, as well as this sampling of Absolutely. People who are not really big freight yeah. airports. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Just wanted to review a little bit of our passenger traffic over the last 10 years. In blue is the Anchorage traffic. In yellow is the Fairbanks traffic. And we've had some, you know, good steady growth, not great, you know, but it's good, steady, and continues to grow there.
Yeah.
And our cargo traffic continues to grow as well.
I figured that out too late.
And you know, we've had a couple of downturns in economies over the years. In 98, 99, we had a Japanese economic crisis. 2001, we had September 11th. It continues to up and down. The downturn we're in now is something that we've never seen before, but in the past we've always seen a rebound between in 9 to 12 months. This might be a little bit longer. of a downturn there.
So the slide that you showed us with all the airplanes, where you said 40 wide-body aircraft on the deck in October of 08. You don't need to go back to it, but in order to continue to achieve compounded growth, if 40 starts to max out the facility, how much more growth do we have? Do we have the ability to grow by another 50% annually, or is that a good question?
It's a great question.
Through the chair, what we do have is capacity to grow at both Anchorage International and Fairbanks International Airport. We have a great deal more land mass than most airports of our size. What could in the future slow us down is the timing of the aircraft, what types of slots they're trying to meet in other parts of the country, and the throughput. Those are issues that we look at. But currently we do have land available at both airports to deal with increased cargo activity.
So we have, what's unique to Alaska is our geography, the low cost of landing fees, and the globally competitive price for jet aviation fuel. Those are perhaps the three very dominant characteristics that the Ted Stevens Airport offers. Is that fair to say? And we have the capacity, without adding any more infrastructure and without more investment, to still grow considerably. Is that fair?
I believe our master plan projection was at least 10 years' worth of growth at 3 to 5%.
Wow, that's a lot. Professor Dugan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the bottleneck there, if there is one, is getting planes on and off the ground rather than having a place to build a new cargo facility.
That's correct.
Correct. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Oh yes. Tuck, and then Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was on the Airport Planning Commission back in 2001 or 2002. I can't remember what year it was, and I don't have my notes down here with me in Juneau. But the forecast was is that we were running out of land pretty quickly with the amount of volume. I think we're second. I see we're second worldwide, and at that time they were saying that we were second in North America. And so there was discussions on whether or not we were going to turn Fire Island into a potential airport. I don't know if you were part of those back then, if you were working for the airport at that time. And then also, there's some land that's already been purchased and held over at Point McKenzie. And there was discussions then about moving possibly the air freight over there first, and then eventually passenger service, because we are running out of land. But then again, we were thinking 50 years down the road, and thinking when would be the ultimate time to start making those plans. Any idea? Can you speculate? Can you let us know what the plans are, Point McKenzie?
What I can tell you is that in airport planning, we typically plan in our master plan horizons for a 30-year type of window. So it's highly speculative, because you have to base some of the models on what that growth rate is going to be, and on a lot of assumptions. And it really depends on what's going on in the global economy as well as the U.S. economy. And what we have seen in our last master plan, the projected numbers were very accurate to what was reality, what had actually happened when we looked back. Our most recent master plan was much more optimistic from what we are seeing, and that's what's being reevaluated here in the future when the economy is a little healthier.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's good to be here.
We're happy to have you. You're intellectually curious, and that is rewarded in this committee.
Thank you. Hope to live
Dugan,
up to
there was
that.
Another one.
You're on a roll, Mr. Chairman. As you probably know, I don't actually have the privilege of having the airport, the terminal, and the runways in my district, I have a lot of the support services. I have everything kind of east of Postmark Drive, so I have Lake Hood and Lake Spinard, a lot of the support services, and the residential groups that are kind of east of the airport. And as we're talking about where we're going in terms of trends, I'm a big believer in the airport as a job and economic stream, and want to find great ways to help the airport move forward and expand. But last year we had a little bit of an issue over the runway issue, moving and expanding runways. You know, we got the coastal trail right there, and questions about flight paths, and are they going to go away from people, or are they going to fly over the houses? So, you know, I know we're in a little bit of economic uncertainty right now, and I know that that project was sort of tabled for a while, but I was wondering if you could talk about anticipated plans going forward for runway expansion or moving of runways.
Certainly. At this time, the master plan and the fourth runway have been put off indefinitely. And one of the reasons is that our airlines, which pay for our infrastructure, felt that the airport and the system had not assessed and done a thorough job in its growth projections, and that it also had not looked at the system capacity, and the system capacity includes Fairbanks Airport. And so once we restart the master planning process, we will actually do a system plan that looks at the capacity of the two airports together, but also looks at the growth rate projections and some of the other assumptions that were made. There were very likely overly optimistic growth rates projected. And so that's what we need to revisit in the future. But at this time, we want to wait a while for things to recover, because this is not the time, and we still have enough capacity to be addressing our needs for several years at a minimum. As I mentioned earlier, we do have the capacity by managing the incoming and outgoing traffic differently. There's new technology, and there are things we can do on our existing airfield to actually increase throughput that probably haven't been looked at quite well enough yet.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so we've gone through a little bit of an overview on what traffic is there. Now I thought we would talk a little bit about why we have the traffic and the benefits that that offers here. Our strategic location is clearly what drives the cargo activity in Anchorage and Alaska. And it's called, we use a term called payload versus range. And this slide is a slide that we actually had developed for us by a UPS flight ops to flight plan out one of their 747s, going from Hong Kong to Chicago nonstop versus Hong Kong fuel stop in Anchorage and on to Chicago, and what that does to their revenue. If you go nonstop from Hong Kong to Chicago, it's about 7,800 nautical miles, and you can carry a payload of about 134,000 kilos. If you stop in Anchorage, it's 7,900 nautical miles, a couple hundred extra miles, but you can carry 246,000 kilos on board
fuel.
The airplane.
Weight of fuel?
What's that?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
If you multiply that times $2 a kilo, figuring an 85% load factor on the airplane, with a fuel stop in Anchorage, you can increase your revenue by almost $200,000. And all of the carriers that are traveling through the Anchorage airport, all of them may not see as much revenue calculation there. They're seeing huge revenue.
Representative Dugan has a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We don't have it plotted up there, but would it be safe to assume that the numbers for going from Hong Kong to Chicago and stopping in Fairbanks rather than Anchorage would be roughly the same?
They're almost identical.
Thank you.
Within
You're welcome. And just, are you staying over tonight, or what's your schedule?
Yes, we are here. I'm here this week, and Linda is also here.
I would recommend. I'm just watching this, you know, and there's only four of us. We often have a gavel to gavel here, but I would recommend that you go talk to Senator Pascavan and Representative Olson, who chair the two Labor and Commerce committees, and offer to make the same presentation to them. This is just so compelling that if you were successful in, you know, being able to do a 20-minute presentation to each of those committees, you would end up with about a quarter of the legislature, a third of the legislature seeing this. It's just such a compelling bundle of information, and we're so happy to have you here. It's a terrific presentation.
We would be delighted to. We always enjoy getting people informed about our airports and what models we have here in Alaska.
Well, Margaret Dowling has put together a series of about 8 really happy stories. Every time we convene here, it's for some really super positive, happy story about a success in Alaska. And it's the fuel. Is that the thing? Is you're displacing fuel with freight? Is that?
Yeah, it's either one or the other. You can either carry fuel or you can carry revenue. So
okay.
Cost or revenue.
And my recommendation on that slide would be to add the weight of the fuel, just because it would make the difference. You put the payload, but the weight of the fuel would be irrelevant.
The weight of the fuel would be identical to the weight of the payload.
Ah, interesting. Man, that is a lot of fuel.
Yes.
Yeah. And what about the cost of Jet A? Could we in the future could we see a slide of what Jet A costs in various markets, or that's just not something you do?
We could find spot prices.
Okay, that would be terrific.
That's clearly nothing what the carriers are paying.
Understood. Well, we're more interested in the relevancy of the Anchorage market to other markets in the same way that you showed landing fees rather than how much the fuel is. We're more interested in the relevant pricing of one market to the other. So if Anchorage is number 3 in freight, if you could just get us a spot price for, say, the top 5 markets so that we could find out where Alaska is relative That would be a very interesting variable for us.
Thank you. I actually had some other, but I didn't bring that down. So,
Mark, nice presentation. Very good. Yeah, you get credit.
One of the things that we have been very, very successful at the Anchorage Airport is working with the federal agencies in getting some regulatory advantages that helps our carriers enter the market, reduce barriers to trade, and most recently one of the things that we have assisted the governor's office on was the Fairbanks Customs Border Protection denied the landing rights for Japan Airlines to take their winter charters into Fairbanks because of a lack of staffing and overtime, and we were able to work with customs back east and get some additional overtime budget, and they approved the Japan Airlines flights to go into Fairbanks. We've also have a program established in Anchorage called Progressive Clearance, and all of these advantages are necessary because Anchorage is classified as the first port of entry. Although it's not the port of destination, there's so many federal requirements on what you have to do at first port of entry that it would actually limit the number of carriers that would come into the market. So we've got Progressive Clearance is currently used by China Airlines on their passenger flights from Taipei into Anchorage, which allows the passengers to get off the airplane and go through the document inspection, and then they clear their bags in New York, and so the carrier does not have to download the bags here, and that saves a lot of time. The passengers, when they get to New York, they grab their bags, they're through customs, and they're out the door. It's a much quicker process for the customer as well, too. We also have a waiver called International to International. It allows flights that are coming in from an international point going on to another international point for the passengers on board, they're not required to have a U.S. visa. The U.S. government requires if you go to any other port in the U.S. that even though you're just transiting flights and changing flights for 45 minutes, they require you to go get a U.S. visa. And we have a waiver for that. And one of the biggest advantages we have is a cargo transfer authority here. In 1996, the US DOT awarded us the ability, cargo transfer flexibility, which allowed the carriers to reconfigure their loads while they're on the ground. They could change from their own airplanes, they could change from big airplanes to multiple small airplanes, they could mingle foreign and domestic cargo. And there was a clause in there that allowed them to go from foreign to foreign transfers. And so we thought that would allow a Korean Airlines to transfer to a China Airlines and take on to the U.S. And when we tried to do that, they said, no, we meant foreign to take it back outside the country. So they said, if you want to do a foreign-to-foreign transfer, you need to go for a legislative, a regulatory change. So we had to pursue a change in the law through Congress, and that was finally passed on December 12th of 2003 that allows foreign carriers to transfer to each other here in Anchorage to complete a journey to the U.S. They're not allowed to pick up U.S. cargo or domestic cargo in Anchorage and take it to another U.S. port, but they are allowed to accept cargo that has come in from Taipei and take it to its final destination within the U.S. And I have a slide here on examples on how that would work. The very first customer that we had for this was Northwestern Korean Airlines. Korean was flying out of Seoul into Anchorage. Northwest was flying out of Tokyo into Anchorage. Korean Air flew onto Chicago, and Northwest flew onto Chicago. Korean flew onto Atlanta. And when they came into Anchorage, they traded five containers of freight for each other. And Korean could always transfer to Northwest to carry their freight, Northwest was not allowed prior to this legislation to transfer cargo to Korean Air to take to Chicago. Now, what this did was Northwest never served the Atlanta market before. And overnight, they have access to the Atlanta market with no investment in an asset investment at all into the marketplace. And for Korean and Northwest customers, we got 7-day-a-week service into Chicago, which allows overnight service at a 50% premium. So the carriers were able to make additional money, and they were also able to be very cost efficient. One of the most interesting aspects of this was that China Airlines was flying from New York into Anchorage, and then they were transferring their cargo to UPS to take into Shanghai. China Airlines is a Taiwan-based cargo carrier and has no access into the very lucrative China market. So for them to be able to pick up their cargo in New York and transfer it to a carrier that can take it into mainland China opened up huge revenue opportunities for us. Well, the cargo transfer flexibility, the new expanded cargo transfer, doesn't really attract new business into Alaska to do this. What this does is it anchors our current carriers here and gives them a reason to be here that they can't get anyplace else, and gives us long-term stability in our economic engine there. I wanted to talk a little bit about market opportunities, and I think your slide might be a little bit different on this one than what I have here. One of the things that we want to make sure that people know is that our cargo carriers that come through Anchorage have access to every country in Asia. They have the traffic rights to every country in Asia. They have the space to every country in Asia, and the rates are very, very cheap. The westbound traffic to Asia is the carriers are flying almost empty going to Asia, and they wheel and deal on the prices going to Asia. So the access is there, the pricing is there, and the authority is there to take cargo.
I'm sorry, you had a question, and then I want you to repeat that. I'd like to have you say that. Representative Tuck?
No, I was just saying that's very, very interesting information. It really is. Thank you.
But would you talk about that again? I think we're all familiar with trucks that deadhead back.
Yes.
Would you say that again, please, about which way these airplanes are deadheading?
These airplanes are going westbound, nearly empty.
Westbound is?
To Asia. They're going to Asia. Coming in from Asia, they are completely full. Going back to Asia, they're maybe 30%, 40% full.
So if we wanted to make a marriage, would we want to convene, let's say, the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, for instance, with some of these particular players and with the World Trade Center? Is that the kind of...
Well, we actually work very closely with Alaska Seafood Marketing.
Sure.
I came from the freight forwarding industry. I handled all the fish accounts for my company there. You know, whenever I work with these carriers, I know the fish shippers. I hook them up. Opening up markets overseas or places to sell the fish is the issue. We've got the space, we've got the price, we've got the capacity, we've got the authority. You know, the trick is to pull seafood from an existing market and move it to that, to an overseas market. But if there's an opportunity to sell it at a much higher price, there's the opportunity for the state there. One of the things that has been driving our business for the last few years here is the growth in China. And every country overseas has a bilateral agreement with the U.S. that allows our cargo carriers to fly into their markets, their cargo carriers to fly into our markets. We currently have an agreement with China called a unique agreement, which means the carriers are limited and the frequencies are limited. Currently, there are 5 Chinese carriers that are designated to operate the routes, and we have 5 cargo carriers designated to fly. And all of these carriers operate through Anchorage as well. We have very high levels of service to countries like Vietnam, Singapore, India. Every one of our cargo carriers currently have the authority to pick up cargo, take it to their home country, and transfer it on as
now,
well.
Now, when the World Trade Center was here, those were the 3 countries that I identified that Alaska ought to pursue. It's newest trading partners with whom we don't have a relationship, Vietnam, Singapore, and India. So can you just detail what our cargo relationship is like with those 3 countries, please?
All 3 of our Japanese carriers, all of our 2 Korean carriers, our 2 Taiwanese carriers, all of our Chinese carriers, they all have traffic rights from here into Vietnam, into Singapore. Of course, we have Singapore Airlines that flies through China to Singapore. FedEx, UPS, both have access, rights and authority, and they operate to Vietnam, Singapore, and India. The interesting thing about India is that we have the ability and space to send cargo to India at this point. If India develops into a market where we start seeing full freighters operating into India, those routes are going to fly over Europe because it's about 2,000 miles shorter to the U.S. from India, Europe, and into the U.S. than it would be to come to Anchorage and then...
Interesting. We've been joined by our good friend, Representative Jules, here. He's laying low in the back. He's doing good, though. He's doing good.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you. The unique agreement with China, is that an agreement between the federal government and so that's for the U.S.
It's
as a whole? Right. That's not just for Alaska?
Correct. Correct. All agreements.
Exactly.
The agreements between Vietnam and Singapore are what we call open skies, which is unlimited carriers, unlimited service. And the agreement between India is somewhat limited on designations and frequencies. It's fairly open there. And I just kind of wanted to show you the impact of what this U.S. Air Service agreement has done to the China market and to the Anchorage business just over the last few years. The agreement was first signed in 2004. And in 2000, we had 15 landings a week operating into China from Anchorage. 2006, 2 years into the agreement, it jumped to 198 landings a week. By 2007, we were up to 260 landings a week. And at that point, it was accounting for 35% of all the cargo traffic at Anchorage from the China market. Interestingly enough, the China-U.S. cargo market is almost 37% of the entire Asia-North America route, which shows how closely the activity at the Anchorage Airport mirrors the global air cargo market. It is very, very close there. To show you the economic impact of the cargo at the Anchorage Airport, cargo accounts for two-thirds of all airport revenues at the airport. And on the right there, I've got a list by revenue of the top cargo carriers. And of the list there, the top nine international carriers account for 55% of that cargo revenue. So they are a very, very important part of our business. And we rely very heavily on them. I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about some of the strengths and opportunities and weaknesses and threats that we see at the airport. First of all, our strategic location, it is unmatched. It is the most advantageous location in the world for a cargo hub. We have very competitive rates. We have worked very, very hard over the last several years to have great carrier relationships, especially with our international carriers. You can see how important that revenue is. And doing business with our Asian carriers, it's all about building relationships and friendships, and we work very, very closely with them. Of course, our close alternate airport, having the Fairbanks Airport, is very important because we are isolated. It's important we have a great airport in case of diversions there. And one of the things that you don't hear a lot about is a parts exchange program that operates between the carriers at the airport. Every time somebody comes in here, they almost always need maintenance. And between all the parts that are warehoused and stored at the airport to support this operation, you could probably build an entire 747 out there. But all of the carriers have exchange programs with each other where they trade parts when they need it. And so they all work very closely together, and planes come and go every day without skipping a beat there. Sometimes we need a new engine, but you know, for the most part, they come and go. The opportunities we see out there is our existing all-cargo carrier operations. All the carriers that we have based out there gives us opportunities for creating partnerships for cargo transfers. We're seeing an increased use in freighters. TSA is requiring all cargo on passenger airplanes to be 100% screened. We're seeing the international carriers that have both passenger and cargo operations shifting as much of the cargo to freighters as possible. And then we're seeing a growing base of Chinese carriers, new cargo carriers. By 2011, we're hoping that will be an open skies market, and we're anticipating additional Chinese cargo carriers to operate through here at that point. It's not always a bed of roses, as usual. Some of the threats that we have is one of the things that we do not have a good manufacturing base here in Alaska. And other airports have, you know, manufacturing opportunities, and so that creates some great export opportunities for the carriers that we don't have here.
Right. We've been joined by Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you.
One of the concerns for our carriers here is the weather and the de-icing. De-icing is a very high cost part of their operation, and that's always a concern in maintaining our carriers here. We always, always, always have competition from other airports. We are the big dog when it comes to airports, and people will always try and take our traffic from us. and we work very hard, and we've had several airports take a run at our business on a regular basis. And we.
How much does de-icing cost?
Do
you kind of add that to the landing fee in order to stay competitive? That next threshold was $1,800. So if it costs $700 to de-ice a plane, then landing fee plus de-icing would have us competitive with that 10th airport, for instance.
Yeah. I think, you know, $800 to $1,000.
Interesting.
That's a lot.
It is.
So if whatever percentage of flights have to be de-iced, maybe a quarter of them or a third of them, over the course of a year, so that landing fee schedule, because a lot of those other airports don't require de-icing, so you really would take the average de-icing cost over all those flights and kind of add it to that landing fee to kind of actually determine where we are cost-wise, because that cost is borne by the airplane itself, isn't it?
But also keep in mind that the fuel stop in Anchorage is increasing their revenue that they would not have on board.
Right.
So they look at a total package and not just...
Interesting. Right.
Some of the weakness, of course, is the global recession that we are experiencing right now and the decline of our flights. One of the weaknesses is overflights. And I mean that in two different ways. They are developing longer range aircraft, but that has not been that much of an impact at this point. But because of the global recession, the flights are light, so they can pack more fuel at this point. So we're seeing a lot, some from the global recession, some from hauling additional fuel and not needing to stop here. Once the economy comes back up, those flights will come back through Anchorage. Again, we have no local manufacturing base and limited air exports.
So what would we have to manufacture that would be valuable enough to put on an airplane instead of a boat? Because you can't just manufacture widgets there's a great we met in D.C. with a USDA person. You know, we're a great market for Alaska potatoes in China, but you really can't afford to load potatoes into an airplane. Even if it's deadheading, be expensive custom potatoes.
Yeah. I mean, really, it would have to be something along the perishable route that requires.
Oh, Representative Jewell.
Do you have perishable warehousing capability at the Anchorage Airport?
Actually, several of the carriers have freezers, chillers, for that very reason. Yeah.
To accommodate salmon as well,
mm-hmm.
So that we're getting, as opposed to fresh or frozen, we can get them out fresh.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then one of the weaknesses we have is our domestic air cargo network. Carriers who can pick up cargo from Anchorage and move it to the lower 48. We have worked and worked and worked over the years since I've been at the airport and prior to working at the airport, and pursued opportunities to develop warehousing and distribution opportunities at the airport. And so I have a little slide here that's kind of cryptic, but hopefully we can walk through this together and it will make sense when we get done here. All the little airplane arrows that are coming in from Asia into Anchorage there are all the carriers that operate from Asia into the lower 48. So if you bring something in from off of one of these any of the international carriers, and you take it off the airplane and you put it into a warehouse and you're going to remanufacture it or do a pick and pack or some kind of warehousing distribution program. When you get ready to ship it out to the lower 48, we only have four carriers who can take that out. And the problem with the traffic that moves from westbound to eastbound is that segment of traffic is jam-packed. It is full. And so in order for somebody to get something on the flights going to the lower 48, When I worked for an air freight forwarder, when we had to move something from Anchorage to the lower 48, if we wanted to get it on board one of those airplanes, we had to pay all the way from Asia to Anchorage and to the lower 48 to make sure that they would leave that space empty so we could put something on board. And they usually charged us priority charges on it just because we needed it so badly. So when you add that into the economic equation of making a warehouse and distribution program here in Alaska, we have not been able to find an equation that works for the carriers, for warehouse and distribution folks, and so. And then just kind of to wrap things up, this is actually a recap of fiscal year 2008. And it wasn't looking too bad through the end of the fiscal year. We were just off a little bit. And then we started seeing some major decreases in our cargo operation after October, after the Christmas rush was over. Our passenger traffic has continued to stay, actually fairly steady. We've seen a little bit of a drop here in February of about 6 or 7%, which is really amazing considering what other airports around the U.S. are feeling. Our cargo traffic has taken a very big drop in January, a little bit bigger dip in February. But our largest ground handler in Anchorage, who takes care of probably 90% of all our international cargo, has said they have seen a little spike upward in March, which we usually have a spike upward, so we are happy to see that. And then just so we end on some good news here, just wanted to talk about...
It's been all good news so far. It's a great presentation.
Okay, then some really good news. Well, one of our carriers, NCA, Nippon Cargo Airlines, that operates out of Japan. They had previously closed out their New York operation, and so in 2 months they are reopening their New York station and... going to add additional flights through Anchorage and continue on. Cathay Pacific, Hong Kong-based carrier, just opened two new stations, Miami and Houston. They just added new freighters, 747-400s, extended range freighters, and they are bringing six additional flights a week through Anchorage. The most amazing thing about these flights is that they are coming in full and going back to Hong Kong full. I mean, that's unheard of in a great market. In a marginal market like this, it's like totally unbelievable. So we're happy for their success. The U.S. Government named Evergreen International Airlines as the new carrier to fly into China beginning the end of this month. Evergreen has applied for a waiver saying the market is not right for them to enter the market yet. Kalita Air was the backup carrier, and they have said, hey, if they don't want it, we'll take it, we'll fly tomorrow, give us the designation. So somebody's going to fly here, so to China. And finally, UPS, they have opened up a new hub in Shanghai, and they currently have 21 landings a week into China. They have applied to the US DOT for 8 more frequencies per week, so that'll increase their flights. Up to 29 flights a week from into China, not counting all the rest of their overseas. So we are seeing, you know, carriers are very careful. They're going into markets where it makes sense. They're increasing service where it makes sense, but they're also being careful about where they are decreasing service as well. So we appreciate the opportunity to share this information.
And I would like to say in summary, thank you to Linda for coming down and going over all the intricacies of cargo marketing and international marketing, because it is a very specific field. It is built on relationships over many years and over even many administrations. And some of the things that I just wanted to thank you also for inviting us and point out that we don't take being the number one dog for granted at all in our system. When we're operating as a system, and my staff and I take that very seriously, and we want to remain competitive. Just because you're number one, you know, that means you can fall down quicker too. And so we're watching the ups and downs in the global economy and the cargo very closely. We stay on top of it daily. And being a northern climate airport does put us at somewhat of a disadvantage, and so that's why we take this very seriously, because it does cost more with the heating and de-icing and some of those costs that you have on the ground. And so we want to be a low-cost airport intentionally. We need to be to remain competitive, and we take it very seriously, and my staff has over the last year, to keep those rates and fees competitive for these air carriers to continue to make Alaska as their main operation. And so I think we're doing a good job so far, and we're looking forward to continuing to do so. Thank you.
You're welcome. Is there anything Fairbanks can do to be more competitive or to attract some of those landings, since the two airports work in tandem with one another?
Well, we have done quite a few things in the last several years. One of the, as well as the community as well, I've been working very closely in the community. One of the concerns we had heard in the past from some of our air carriers is there weren't, the facilities just weren't nice enough for the folks who support the carriers. And so I think with some of the, there's been a lot more facilities to stay at in Fairbanks, food service. You know, it's really has some nice places. And we also have a new terminal. That is one of the things that has also been mentioned. The terminal has been remodeled, and we'll have a terminal opening here in May coming up that has so far been under budget, on schedule, and we're very proud of it. It will be a model terminal. And we also have expanded our cargo ramp facilities on Fairbanks International Airport so that the airport can handle cargo now. In, I believe it was October, November, we had several diversions from Anchorage International where our FedEx operations were diverted, and there were 20 wide-body aircraft to Fairbanks International Airport. So it really anchors us in terms of having that ability to go quickly to another very close location, still be supported. So I think we're doing a lot of the types of activities that will help our Fairbanks market as well.
Are the landing fees the same in Fairbanks as they are in Anchorage?
They are. Recently in, they are currently the same because it is the same system. We have put in place an incentive for non-signatory carriers that are simply passing through. They're not really reliant on certain types of services, because we have similar services now at both airports, but that could choose to go to an alternate location within our own system. So we have put an incentive in place so that they could choose, if they so wanted, to go to Fairbanks.
Wonderful. Questions? Well, ladies, what a fabulous presentation. Very, very interesting. And we thank you very much. We encourage you to, Margaret and I would be happy to help give you an introduction to Senator Pascavan's office, as well as Representative Olson's office, to deliver this presentation there. It would be worthwhile, I think, for other members. Is that a consensus of the table? It's an amazing presentation. It really is truly remarkable. Any questions for our guests? Ladies, we thank you very much. We do have Pete Carlson here who would like to testify. Are you okay, Pete? Okay. Oh, okay. No problem. Good. What do you think, Pete? Interesting? Does it get a thumbs up from you? Interesting presentation. So with that, if there are no more questions, we want... Yes? Oh, yes?
If there's
Do we have Karina Peterson is online? It says questions, though. I'm not sure. Do you have... Karina, are you with us? Do you have questions?
Can you hear me?
Yes, uh-huh.
Hi. Just a quick question for either Linda or Dean, basically. We were talking here about the Prince George Airport runway expansion that I just completed in February. And just on the competitive nature of that, they really want to bring in kind of the overflow of traffic from other airports, and including from Anchorage. So are you guys, concerned about that airport runway expansion and what they could maybe, I guess, steal from us?
Well, this is Christine Klein. We always take all competition seriously. However, I think if Prince George was truly competitive, we would have probably seen some carriers go there. They have one runway. I don't believe they have a taxiway. It's a fairly small community, and really for the types of operations we are looking at, you need to have quite a developed support system, from ground support equipment, de-icing equipment, and service providers, and I'm not sure Prince George has that in place. I certainly don't want to speak for Prince George, but it is quite a large investment and usually takes years to develop. So I think, you know, they could become a competitor perhaps in the future, but they also have Vancouver very close, that another very large cargo and international airport. Hopefully that answers your question.
No, thank you. And I actually talked to somebody here who was saying that one of the advantages of our airport is just that, you know, the long-term building relationships and such, and what, you know, the money and everything that you guys have already put into place, that it'd be hard for Prince George Airport to catch up, I guess.
That's basically how we see it at this time, certainly.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your one slide, you showed all the Asian markets hidden Alaska, then going on to the lower 48. Where's the traffic going now from Asia to Canada? Are there any opportunities for us to take advantage of that?
Actually, quite a few. Cathay Pacific, Air Canada, you know, they come through here and then go onto Asia, or onto Canada, I'm sorry. If they're going to Vancouver, most likely they go directly there. If they're going to East Coast Canada, they usually come through here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Very good. With that, I'll just remind committee members that tomorrow at 8:30, we have the highest-ranking diplomat representing the Dalai Lama, who will be in the House Finance Committee Room at 8:30 tomorrow morning. It should be a very remarkable visit. And any closing comments? With that, we're adjourned.